From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the fourth day of January 2019. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzlow. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. And a bit later in the program, Eric Snodgrass from Agrible will join us to take a look at the weather forecast here in the United States and how the warm weather here is actually related to the really wet weather in Argentina and the dry weather in Brazil. Some news up front as well. Next Friday's USDA report, that would be January the 11th, the final crop production report of the year, the world agricultural supply demand estimates, and other reports, including the quarterly grain stocks numbers, has officially been postponed by the agency. It says it won't produce the reports until the government shutdown has ended. We'll ask Mike about that and what it might mean to the marketplace, if anything, during this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
We're now joined by Mike Zuzlow. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Take a look at what's been happening in Chicago. Good afternoon to you, Mike. Thanks so much. I appreciate you being with us for this first Friday of the trading year.
Great to be back, Todd. Hey, we're going to be together in 10 days in Albion, thanks to Country Financial. So be sure to come to that Outlook meeting if you can make it.
Yeah, so if you want to know more about that, that's in Albion, Illinois, south of us a couple of hours. And you can find all the details on our website at willag.org. We'll be glad to have you there. One of the things I bet we'll take up, and we're going to start here this afternoon rather than the grains, because there's just been a big rally in the futures markets. And it, are in the financial markets, and it's roiled. It's been up and down. It's done almost everything except go sideways for a very few days. Tell me about the rally today and what it might mean.
Yeah, I think one of the two biggest factors of the four biggest factors for not just today, but this week is what has the Fed chairman been thinking since the last Federal Reserve market meeting in his press conference. And I say that because he's really taken a hit from President Trump in terms of not wanting to come off the idea that they're on a preset path to keep raising interest rates in 2019. That's really hit the stocks. It's really kept the dollar strong. And it's really put a fear, I think, into the market that in terms of commodities, inflation won't be allowed to build up at all anymore in 2019. And I think this is why sectors like the copper and industrial metals have taken such a hit here the last couple, 3 weeks, actually. But today we had an interview with the Fed chairman, and he used the word patience and patient and essentially said, look, we're going to be at a situation where we're going to take a pause if the market tells me to take a pause. And I think that, along with the fact that the wages in today's unemployment report jumped the most since 2008 for the full year, rising 3.2%, these things, I think, really matter to the stock market and really made us stop looking at things like Apple and some of the other negative features coming out of China and really turned us back towards, okay, what's it really look like when you add the whole world together? The global economy, to me, isn't that weak, Todd. It's really the financial markets that are the weak ones, and that's because they're building up a lot of negativity in their minds.
Does it have an impact on the grains and the oil seeds?
Yeah, I think it will. I think one of the things that I'm looking forward to, and I think January could be maybe one of the most important months for the next 6 months because of the China-U.S. meeting that's set in Beijing next week. And I think also this government shutdown actually maybe adds a little bit of upside potential in the market because the quantitative traders are kind of dark now without government data inputs. So they're kind of like the rest of us utilizing momentum and technical indicators and what fundamentals we know, like South American weather. But going back to that Chinese-U.S. meeting, I'm thinking that because China has had some bumpy economic data and bumpy financial data, and the worsening African swine flu, and the fact that Brazil does have a weather market, and Argentina may be right behind it with a weather market. These things, I think, actually add to the idea that China will come to the table this month and make a deal with the United States. If that happens, I think over value levels and gross revenue per acre levels that I've set out with clients and subscribers have a better chance of being hit more than once.
Do you think... I'm wondering about this because I think the goal of the United States has long been to keep China from taking technology as much as the trade goal. Will China bend on that front? Can we really come to a conclusion, do you think, this month?
I do think we can. I think if we take a step back of what you just said, which is 100% right, what really triggered this, other than a change in administration, a new president that was much different than the prior three presidents in terms of foreign policy, is what China started out in 2013 doing, and that is the Made in 2025 Belt and Road, New Silk Road project. And you and I have talked about that quite frequently because I've tried to stay on top of it. This really put China on the offensive when it came to becoming the next world superpower. And the talk in the financial markets, and I think the talk in Washington, was that, hey, if we don't understand what they're trying to do here, we are looking at a new superpower and a new hegemon in the world that is trying to rival the United States, not necessarily be a trading partner or a geopolitical partner with the United States, but the way this Belt and Road Initiative is designed and the way the rhetoric in the Made in 2025 is spelled out essentially is that they're more of a competitor and a geopolitical competitor. So the South China Sea, the Belt and Road Initiative, the Made in 2025, these are, I think, the nucleus to why we're doing what we're doing right now.
Given the size of not their economy, but their population, can the United States really accomplish fencing them in?
I don't think we're trying to fence them in. I really wouldn't categorize it that. I could be wrong, but the research I've done is that we want them to be a valued trading partner, and we don't want them to be a military adversary. And that's why we're going towards North Korea so aggressively, because what they've shown us the last 50-some years is North Korea is going towards a nuclear power. It's right on the edge of it, and China's actually helped them do it. Russia's actually helped them do it. I think this is at the heart of our foreign policy, if I had to take a stab. But going back to the Chinese consumer, I think this is probably where these more commodity-related things like African swine fever come into play, because you know official figures now are taking that outbreak up to 100 or roughly 100, and Reuters is trying to keep track of each occurrence, and they're putting the call at around a little over 200,000. I think it's higher than that. We had a major firm that was a Dutch investment firm growing pigs, aiming to do about 400,000 pigs for slaughter a year. It broke with the African swine fever late this week. So I think you get something like that underneath you, and then you have a tighter Brazil supply. I think the Chinese government realizes their consumer, their domestic middle class, to get them over that middle income trap, they don't want to mess up right here.
Soybean futures for the day. The rally mostly related to South American weather?
Mostly, yeah. I really think that's the case. I think also the lack of news on January 11th probably makes it a more substantial issue. But, you know, we had a major crop estimate from FC Stone come out, 116.2. That later was followed by what formerly used to be Informa. They kept it at 122. And then there's a Brazilian agriculture consultancy that has it at 110 to 115. The way I look at it is you've got 30% of the corn crop in Brazil and about 20% of the bean crop in Brazil that is probably going to see 20 to 40% damage at this stage of the game. So 120 is a stretch for Brazilian bean production, if you ask me. And next week, I think you could lower it substantially at the end of the week if you miss these next rains. So watch that 200-week moving average and meal at 322. That's about 2.5% higher. That gets you up to that 930, 940 area for major resistance in soybeans. And I think if we're going to go above that, we're going to need the weather to help us because of that African swine fever.
You always say that wheat needs to lead the market. I was looking at the year-over-year changes in the marketplace, and I think I probably used the July contracts. I used the lead option, whatever it was at the time. So January, whatever the lead option is, up 76 and a quarter cents last week. Can it maintain that, and will it springboard the rest of the market higher?
Yeah, it was sure nice to see that 18% gain for the year, wasn't it, on lead month futures? And I think that does help. And, you know, that was where the Dease corn for the annual year was able to come in and be higher on the year and not be down 5 or 6 years in a row. So I do think we've got some support there. Real briefly, the European Union came in with some big numbers. I think the trade's going to have to reevaluate the world supplies because their imports for corn right now is up 48% year to date. Their exports for soft wheat are down 27%, and their biggest buyer has been Algeria, which usually buys from France. And so we've got a real dislocation of what's normal for that market.
Hey, thanks so much, Mike. Mike Zuzulo is with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Eric Snodgrass now joins us from Agrible to take up the weather forecast. Let's start here. What a beautiful day it is or was yesterday, and not too bad today. What do conditions look like for the next several days here in the United States?
Yeah, well, we can thank this really nice ridge that's moved in. The low-pressure system that hit Texas and parts of Oklahoma really hard yesterday with a bunch of snow is moving to our south. So we missed all that rainfall. In fact, I can look outside right now and see the northern edge of that cloud field. It's staying to our south for the most part. But coming in behind that, we've got tomorrow's going to be even better, Saturday's going to be a beautiful day. And it may not be until Sunday night, Monday morning, that we start to see another chance at precipitation. But it's so warm that the rain snow line for this next system is going to be in Wisconsin. So we've kind of moved into this warmer regime, and it's going to stick around for quite some time, maybe through middle of the month. Now, that doesn't mean we won't see any, you know, big low pressure systems coming through the country. We're certainly going to see that. Maybe our next one, this would be the one following the one that I'm going to watch this Monday, would be January 11th. And that one I'm going to have to watch a lot more closely. That one is one I'm concerned about potentially snow here in Illinois for, but that's a week away. So I got to watch it a lot between now and then. But yeah, it's quite the opposite of what we talked about. You know, let's talk maybe the second, third week of December. We were thinking at the beginning of the new year was going to come in with some pretty ferocious cold, but things have really shifted quite a bit from that forecast time period.
And speaking of shifting, there's a lot of shifting weather in South America. I think maybe we better take that up today, too.
Yeah, well, what's interesting about it is what's shifting the weather here in North America is also playing out in South America. So the two big things I'm watching right now is one, the polar vortex has split. We've got one branch of it that's kind of spinning over parts of Europe and the other over the northeastern part of the U.S. Now, normally when that happens, we would expect really, really cold air for us. But there's two other competing factors. One of those is the Madden-Julian Oscillation, and that is really affecting South America. But the Madden-Julian Oscillation plus this deep trough in the Gulf of Alaska just keeps us warm. Now, that MJO has been in phases 3, 4, 5, and 6 over the last month, and those are drier phases for Brazil. In other words, when the MJO goes into those phases, the Brazilian monsoon weakens. Now, it's still rain. I mean, they're still getting rain, but it's far below average. And the next 15 days, as the Madden-Julian Oscillation goes into phases 7 and eventually to 8, we're still seeing that drier pattern. Now, we're harvesting the 90-day bean crop in northern Brazil, but it's been southern Brazil growing regions. So I'm talking here about Mato Grosso do Sul and Parana that over the last month have seen about 25% of average precipitation. And remember, this is an area that started off the growing season quite wet. So folks have been kind of sitting around waiting to see if this dryness was going to have an impact. And now the answer is yes. They're getting some of those beans harvested. Yields are 30 to 35% below what they were a year ago for the first crop beans, the early season beans. And this is all due to the dryness. Now, what this means in terms of the planting of the safrinha crop, as we start to get into that into January and February, that remains to be unseen. But right now, the next 15 days continues to look dry in Brazil. And, you know, that kind of shakeup in South America is something I think a lot of people have been looking for as maybe our first weather hiccup that we've had in a long time.
So following up on that train of thought there, Eric, when you look further out, and I know this is really difficult, to the safrinha or second crop corn, does the weather now have any indication of what that weather will be like for that second crop corn and how early the dry conditions might arrive?
It doesn't. And what I mean by that is that the Brazilian monsoon and its wetter time periods typically last all the way through March. So what we watch between now and March is just the fluctuations in its strength. What would be concerning is if the safrinha crop went in late, because if it went in late, we would be pushing, you know, grain fill and harvest toward when the monsoon is naturally slowing down, which is a hotter and drier. So in other words, it would be like us worrying about a hot and dry August and September if we planted really, really late. You know what I mean? So that's the bigger concern, which means the monsoon can come right back in full strength, you know, if we start to see some of these other global features aligning. What's got me concerned is that as they pull out this first crop, You know, and if they plant the second crop into some drier conditions, it's just a germination issue. But at this point, it's too early to say whether or not we're going to be seeing an impact from El Nino later on. El Nino has peaked. It is not going to get stronger. We may have already seen its full influences here. That's why most of the discussion has been about this Madden-Julian oscillation this year. It's been the dominant player for the last 60 days or so. So if the Madden-Julian oscillation goes back into what would be the cool phases for the United States, those are the wet phases for Brazil. And, you know, Brazilian farmers would be quite happy, although it'll make for problems as they try to harvest the first crop beans if it's too wet. But, the bigger picture, longer term issues wouldn't be until we get into March and April with the slowing down of the whole monsoon toward the end of the season.
Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate it. We'll talk with you again next week.
Yeah, sounds good.
And, of course, is Eric Snodgrass. He is with Agrible.